Hello and welcome back to another edition, a special edition of the Dog and Duck Show. Our Washington Huskies are 13-0. They are the infinite Pac-12 champions. And this is the Dog and Duck Show, but my duck co-host could not make it tonight. He's dealing with a little illness. And so in his place is my dog friend, really the man who made this whole thing happen, JJ Vansel. JJ, how are you doing, my friend?
Never been better, Warren. Never been better. Can you believe the weekend we just had?
Well, you said it right there, the word believe. Nobody believed, but we believed. Last week on the show, we both picked the Dogs to win. All the prognosticators, they had the Ducks by 9 points, 9.5 points. People were saying they're going to stomp these Dogs. It's all a mirage. But the Dogs didn't just squeak out a win. The Dogs won this game with dominance. And so what a display by Kalen DeBoer and this Washington Husky team. When did you start to feel, as you watched this game, this is it? This is going to happen.
So first half, obviously the game, you know, was way more uncomfortable than we would have wanted it down the stretch. But I think we were all, the last several weeks, Warren, we're looking at this Husky team and we're going, gosh, guys, where are you? Where are you? We know you have this, we are not seeing your full potential. And we knew it was there. We believed it was there, but game after game after game, culminating in the Apple Cup, we're just going, where did this team go? What happened? And thoughts of, honestly, thoughts of 2016 became front and center as we thought, if you remember the first part of that year, Jake Browning was as lights out. He was, I think at some point, was top two or three in the Heisman kind of initial polls,
and then put up that 70-point burger with the point against Oregon.
Yeah. The Huskies were unstoppable, and then
Let's stop right there for a second. I mean, we can't mention Jake Browning right? without mentioning Jake Browning.
One of the best Monday Night Football games of all time. I mean, in terms of performance.
Yeah.
I mean, the short list of, I think, what was the stat? Like 85% completion percentage, over 300 yards. If you look at the list of other quarterbacks who have had that stat for a single game, it's a Hall of Fame list. And you know who's on it now? Jake Browning.
Yeah. Yeah. 300 plus yards, a rushing touchdown, passing touchdown, an overtime win on Monday Night Football. You know, you know what I was thinking, JJ? I was thinking, those are Bo Nix numbers right there.
Those are that efficiency. Unbelievable. Yeah. I didn't see a lot of checkdowns, though.
How about the 76-yarder to Jamar Chase?
Jamar Chase. Well, I don't know if you saw his post-game interview, but I was pretty impressed. He said, you know, he was asked about the game, and he goes, you know, I haven't played a lot of football recently, but I know how to win. I have a lot of experience winning games.
Wow. What a transition back to Friday night. I know how to win. That is one thing that these Huskies have learned to do over this 20-game winning streak. They've beaten 9 ranked opponents. JJ, since the Huskies lost to Arizona State last October, the Huskies have beaten the Oregon Ducks 3 times, once on their field, once on our field, and once on a neutral field.
You said on the phone, we beat them there, we beat them here, we beat them everywhere.
We beat them everywhere. That's right. That's right. And JJ, you know, I had to do a little research the other day, and I went to the dictionary. Did you know what the word Nix means?
It means zero.
Yeah, it's that image that Dan Lanning holds up in front of him every time a camera shows up. zero, nada, nothing. And that's the number of wins that Bo Nix is going to walk away from his Oregon Duck career against the Washington Huskies. How sweet it is.
Did you see that meme on Twitter, Warren, that you know, the tagline or the prompt was, you know, what two words does Dan Lanning use to describe Kalen DeBoer?
It was the Tom Brady interview.
And it was a Tom Brady getting choked up and then saying my dad. Yeah. And I've probably watched that 5 or 6 times. And also want to make sure that you saw that video of the Duck fan that freaked out, throwing down his hat, yelling obscenities. And I actually thought at first, you know what? This is probably fake. And then you watch it again and you're like, no, you can't fake that level of despair.
Right. And he said, like, he wished he'd gone to San Jose State and become a veterinarian.
And yeah, you got to feel for the guy, and it's fun on this side, but man, that I do think it hits deeper for Duck fans though. Because what? I
don't know, man. I'll be honest, no, JJ.
I'm telling you, it hits deeper for Duck fans because for the last decade, you and I have not been chasing, as Husky fans, we have not been chasing a national championship the way that the Ducks have. We came out of the doldrums, 0-12 in 2008, just trying to get back to respectability.
Yeah.
And so we go through the years with Sark. We get up to those 8 to 9 wins. I think Sark capped out at 9 wins. We can talk about Sark later because he'll be a big part of our story coming up in the next month. But then obviously an angel from on high swoops in and steals Sark to USC. And then Chris Peterson shows up. And then we get back into where we believe we can be.
That's right.
But then honestly, you know, and obviously the disappointment of the way that the Chris Peterson era ended, never fully feeling like we reached our potential, having some disappointing ends to the Browning years. We were like, how did we go from a playoff team to, you know, a 10-4 team or 10-3, some bad losses there. And then obviously Eason not ever becoming who we thought he could be as a 5-star quarterback.
Yeah.
And then the Jimmy Lake era. Right. And so we were chasing respectability and we were chasing supremacy over the Ducks. Mm-hmm. That's what we were chasing.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Ducks have been chasing that natty.
Yeah.
Which that the word that makes me have. Cringe.
Yeah.
The one that we have. Yes. Yes. I've seen the trophy. It is there.
Yes.
And I believe our fellow, you know, our friend and Duck fan did acknowledge that they did play for a national championship and won the game last week. I don't know if that was noticed on the podcast, but I think the depth of longing, like I haven't as a Husky fan, obviously the crowning achievement as a Husky fan would be a national championship.
Yeah.
But I don't think that we as Husky fans have been chasing that as much as the Ducks have.
Sure, sure.
Like that's a fair point. And they've been there twice.
Yeah.
They've been there twice and they've been right on the doorstep. And so that's what they're chasing. Like on a deep, and think about it, with Phil Knight and Nike and the whole state of Oregon, everything is about we're chasing that natty.
Yeah.
Like the recruiting classes, the money, the marketing that Nike does on behalf of that university has all been about getting to that mountaintop. And so,
and once again, they've fallen short, but you know, I agree with that. I would say counterpoint though, as far as this game, I think, you know, we beat Oregon last year and then we finished on top 11-2, although we did not get to go to a Pac-12 championship game. This year, we run the table and we beat Oregon again at home, only to basically realize that if we lost to Oregon in this Pac-12 championship game, it was all for naught. You know, we're not going to the college football playoffs and we don't have any bragging rights for winning earlier in the season. So to me, like, I'll be honest, like, as the host of the Dog and Duck Show, realizing that if we lose that game on Friday night, I've got to live with that for at least 8 months, if not the rest of my life. To me, there was a lot on us as Husky fans to get that game and to finish 3-0 against the Ducks in the Pac-12. We finished 5 of the last 8 against the Ducks. And so really, when you think about kind of the story arc of the Huskies versus the Ducks in the Pac-12, we started out on top. We owned them for decades and decades.
Oh, yeah.
And then for about a 15-year window, they surged far above us, dominated us. But now at the very end, we went toe-to-toe and came out on top.
Right.
So, and speaking of going toe-to-toe, you sent me a meme the other day, and it sparked a lot of conversation in our mutual Dog and Duck text thread. Probably a lot of people have seen it, but just summarize the meme.
So the meme basically, and this came out of the lead up to this Pac-12 championship game, and as the Huskies are just like going late round battles with Utah, with USC and Stanford and Arizona State and then Oregon State, like it felt like, man, we are in the ring, just taking a beating, fighting, scrappy, all that. And Oregon is just destroying them, other teams. You know, like they are up multiple touchdowns in the first half. The game's over within the first quarter. And so this imagery came to mind, and it was the iconic Rocky Volume 4 movie with Rocky facing off against the Soviet Union hero Drago. And so I just created this meme that has Rocky and Drago, you know, kind of glove to glove, and it has Washington, you know, the Washington logo over Rocky and the Oregon logo over Drago. And I said, this perfectly encapsulates this rivalry. On one side, you have this scrappy, resilient, like determined, high character, American, underdog story.
Doesn't pass the eye test.
Everyone's picking Drago. Obviously, we know that Drago previously actually kills Apollo Creed, so he's he is evil incarnate. And I don't say that about the Ducks necessarily, but it's funny. You put this meme out. I put this meme out there, and Drago, the profile of Drago very well could be Bo Nix in terms of the way that they look and the way that their hair is,
for sure,
with those blonde tips. But you have Drago, highly skilled. He is at the state of the art equipment and methods. You remember those kind of side by side workout videos where Drago's running on treadmills with all the cords attached to him, and they're measuring everything they can, and Rocky's out in the desert like doing push-ups.
He's in the snow. He's running. He's up in the snow, in the right? Snow.
And
he's
so
like lifting rocks with wheelbarrows and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yes. So, and what's the key to this, how does Rocky win? Is Rocky wins by lasting 4 or 5 rounds, right?
Yeah.
And keeps punching back. And Drago doesn't have that depth of character and the depth of resilience to handle when he gets punched in the mouth.
Yeah.
And so that's how I felt this game was going to go, that if the Huskies, and I talked about last week, I didn't reference the meme, but if the Huskies can actually go pound for pound, punch for punch with the Ducks don't have the depth of resilience, the experience to to know how to handle that pressure. So they were not, I mean, Drago's downfall was his inability to adapt and overcome when faced with a resilient opponent who won't give up.
Yeah, absolutely. That was so there you go. So spot on. And you know what's so funny, JJ, is like, you know, well, you know, one funny thing is just to think about Dan Lanning's speech before the Colorado game to say, you know, their Cinderella story is coming to an end. You know, that was definitely the end of their Cinderella story. But, you know, on top of that, just the idea that, you know, they put so much into beating this. And you could say, well, the Huskies beating the Mighty Ducks, that was a miracle. That was a Cinderella type of a deal, you know, except for the fact that they've done it three times in a row. So, you know, don't give me this. If they played each other 10 times, the Ducks would have beaten them 8 out of 10. No, they played each other three times and the Dogs beat them all three times.
Well, and I think in the previous two games, I think the Ducks rightfully said, we just blew it down the stretch. Every statistical, you know, most statistical, metrics would say the Ducks played a better game. And that was especially true in Seattle, even though they talk about that game as like, oh yeah, the Huskies lucked out. I'm like, we had an 11-point lead in the second half at the end of the third quarter. We gave you back the game and you just couldn't, you know, execute down the stretch and we pulled it out. But this game, thorough beatdown.
Absolutely.
And we outgained them. We outthrew them. And you know, think about Oregon's offense. No, at no point did Oregon's offense, they had like two or three really fluky plays and a really piss poor pass interference call that led to touchdowns. I don't think they had one drive. Maybe it was the drive towards the end of the, the first drive of the second half where it's like they marched down the field, but also had two fourth downs and a couple long third downs. They just executed well. That was their best drive by far. Mm-hmm. But they were never in rhythm. The Huskies defense was their best game of the year. Mm-hmm. And the Ducks had Bo Nix was uncomfortable the whole time and they had no running game. I mean, you take out that fluky 50-yard run by Nix, and they had 80-something yards.
Yeah, and you take
when was
out
last
that,
time that happened.
Take out that fluky 60-yard touchdown at the end of the game, which how did that happen? But
I know I'm still annoyed by
but
that.
But he had 240 yards, 236 yards passing outside of that. So you know, it was.
Did he have over 300 yards passing?
I believe he did. Yeah.
Okay.
I believe that pass took him over the 300 mark.
Don't you mean the first team all Pac-12 quarterback, Bo Nix? Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes sense of that.
It's just,
I think Pac-12 just feels bad for the Ducks, you know, like give them their W. We'll take the college football playoff.
I don't know if they feel bad for the Ducks. I think that they are jealous of the Dogs. Also I will say this, like, let's be honest. Most of the Pac-12 teams got destroyed by Bo Nix.
Very true.
So
very true.
You know, like
if the coaches vote, yeah.
If the coaches were looking at and going, okay, well, you know, we lost by three touchdowns to Oregon, we lost by 6 points to Washington, then that's probably how they came to that conclusion. Yeah. But you would think that they would do just like the 10-second research to go, well, how did these guys do when they played head to head? You know, and you don't have to research it. Everybody already knows.
Let's
the
just
answer
hope
to that question.
Let's just hope that Dan Lanning voted for Michael Penix.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But well, hey, this episode is all about just two Husky homers celebrating, gloating, basking in the glory of being a Husky, being 13-0, headed to the college football playoffs to play against the Texas Longhorns and our former coach, Steve Sarkisian. We're on a 20-game winning streak. We are the infinite Pac-12 champions. No one will ever be able to take that away from us. And we will definitely have future episodes where we dive in deeper to, statistics, pregame, postgame, all that kind of stuff. But JJ, as we wrap this up, just talk about what it means for you to be a dog right now in this moment of history.
At this moment in history, Warren, I reflect back to the early 2010s. And so much of our identity as Husky fans the last decade or so has been in comparison to the Ducks, right? Yeah. The Ducks were the big bad boys, big boys on the block. And obviously hated rival, and they had all of the leverage. They had every bragging right. We had lost 12 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
We had nothing to say. We had nothing to offer. And I remember sitting in those, either after a game and just going, when will this ever change? And they're going to BCS championships. They're going to to the college football playoff. At least those early 2010s, and it's like, when will this change? And as a fan, you just can never give up hope. And to say, to feel a level of despair and hope, or a lack of hope, especially after the Jimmy Lake year, I just can't help but feel incredibly grateful that we're here.
Absolutely.
Almost like on a spiritual, deeply emotional level. I know I don't want to but it feels like just depth of gratitude for what we've been able to experience the last year, when we had no clue that we could get to these heights again. And so we're back. It's so fun. A coach like DeBoer, where we know a man of character, does it the right way, not showy. There's depth.
Yeah.
The future is bright. So
absolutely. That's how I feel. Yeah, I agree. And I think you're so right. Like there's never going to be a lower low than the 0-12. Only right. Pac-12 team to ever go 0-12 is the Washington Huskies. But the only Pac-12 team to go 13-0 and win their championship is the Washington Huskies. So the lowest of lows and the highest of highs. And, I think about, that losing that game to Montana, because, we had already started the Dog and Duck Show at that point. And I went into that season with hopes pretty sky high. I was predicting a 10-2, 11-1 type season that year, and it all went to pot. But man, JJ, I know you're a little younger than me, and you lived through more of the painful years when I was on the East Coast during the early 2000s. But for me, this also just rekindles so many of the feelings and the emotions of those early 90s years. And just, I love listening to the Husky Honks. I love listening to Greg Lewis and Mario Bailey and reliving all of those moments. And to me, it's just such a cool thing to think that, like, 30 years from now, kids right now are going to be sitting around like you and I talking about this team, talking about this run. And two more games. If we can win two more games, this will be the greatest season in the history of the University of Washington.
Yep.
Arguably the greatest championship run in the history of the Pac-12. I mean, yeah. I'd have to go back and look
maybe at outside USC.
I'm not saying the most dominant.
Yeah.
But no team in the Pac-12 has ever gone 15-0
right
to win a national championship.
Yeah. So, and it's all there for us.
Let's go.
But I want to reference, Warren, I got to watch the game with my 13-year-old son.
Mm.
And so the whole game, we're nervous together. We're high-fiving during big plays. We're huge hugs and jumping around the living room when it was all said and done. And my son, wants to go to school on the following Monday. And he's like, Dad, he'd grown out of his Husky sweatshirt. So on this weekend, we're going shopping for a Husky sweatshirt. And he wants to wear that to school.
That's awesome.
And then your
son. And you live in Coug country.
And now we live in Coug. It's hard to find Husky sweatshirts here.
Yeah.
But we found them off brand, really. You told me that your 18-year-old son texted you after the game. So this generational experience is real.
That's right. He was working, but he was in a job situation where he could watch the game while he was at work. So he's texting me all through the game. When the game is over, he calls me and he says, Dad, it's a miracle. It's a miracle. He says, I told you, Dylan Johnson is the MVP. I knew he was going to be the MVP. And it was just a sweet moment. It was a sweet, sweet moment.
I don't think, there's sometimes that I look at sports in general and I feel bad by how much I'm into it.
Yeah.
It is just a game, but it is deeper than a game when you start talking about the way this creates this sense of community, this sense of like, this is our team.
Yeah.
We're rooting for our city. I grew up in the Seattle area and it's like I've been following the Huskies since I was, my first memory as sports Warren was watching the Rose Bowl in 90. Well, it would have been 92, January 1st, 1992. That's my first sports memory.
I was at that game. And I was wearing a hat that had like the Husky head on it, like the fur head. Yeah, yes. I was at that game.
Let's find that hat. So it's just a beautiful thing. I'm talking to my dad post game, pre game. We're making plans to figure out if we can go to the, the national championship game, should they make it. And it's like, it's this beautiful generational experience where this is our team and we've been waiting for this moment. And when we went to the playoff in 2016, we knew we weren't going to win this game.
Yeah.
It would have been a miracle of miracles to beat the Alabama team, the Jalen Hurts-led Alabama team, and the Deshaun Watson-led Clemson Tigers.
No doubt.
And sure enough, that played out. But this year, we're entering this top four, and there's no reason why we can't win it all. Will we be favored in either game? Probably not.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. We have that secret sauce, and I'll say this last, and I know we got to wrap up, but I don't know if you watched the Josh Pate show.
No, but I've Josh seen some Pate. Clips. Yeah.
So Josh Pate, he's a YouTube, college football analyst, and he has this esteemed Pate model, and he's an arrogant. It's just a weird kind of pretentious guy, but.
Yeah.
He's been a duck homer. And I think he just knew Dan Lanning. He's from the South. He knew Dan from the Georgia days. And he just was convinced. Even when the Ducks lost to the Huskies, he ranked the Huskies way below the Ducks.
Yeah.
He had the Ducks all the way up to number two in his poll. And he actually said, and it's worth going back, he acknowledged that there's something about these Huskies that defy the model. That somewhere there's a secret magic below or alongside this team that makes no sense when you compare the defense and they should lose with 120th ranked secondary or scoring defense. Mm-hmm. One of the more penalized teams in the north in the college football. And he said every year there's a what do you say? Every year there's a team that serves as a scratch on my lens. And that team this year is the Washington Huskies, and I can't explain them, but they just win.
They have it.
They just have it.
They have
it. And winning's a skill. Winning's a skill.
That's right. So, that's right.
Anyway, it's well, worth a watch. He owns that he got it wrong with Washington.
Brother, it is so sweet to be in this moment. But as our favorite coach likes to say, job's not done. So let's job's keep it done. Going. Thank you for joining me, JJ. Thank Happy you to too. All of our dog listeners. Enjoy this. You know, don't stop popping the corks and smoking the cigars. Celebrate it and stick your chest out. Lift your chin, put a little pep in your step because you are the infinite Pac-12 champions. Let's go, dogs.
Yes, we are. Go, dogs. Thanks, Warren.
Thanks, JJ. Hello, and welcome back to a very special edition of the Dog and Duck Show. The Huskies are 13-0. They are the infinite Pac-12 champions. And I know what you're thinking. I can't wait to hear what Warren and Mark have to say about this game. But that's not going to happen today. Today, we've got a special guest with us, Mike Martin from RealDog.com. Mark, unfortunately, is down and out with sickness, so we will save our reaction and discussion time for that for a later date. But Mike, there has never been a better time to be a Washington Husky. How are you doing, my friend?
Well, there has been a better time, but just in my lifetime, you know, with the 91 team. But if in the last 35 years, no, there's not been a better time. And it's too bad that Mark can't be here, because I know that Michael Penix, when he had the flu, he showed up and played a football game. So I really don't know how he could be any worse for the wear than a quarterback out there throwing the ball around. But hey, that's how Huskies roll.
That's right. That's right. We're this is dog weather and we're used to it. And let's talk about this because, you know, the gold standard is and will always be 1991, the Washington Huskies, Steve Ettman, Dave Hoffman, you know, Billy Joe Hobert, Mario Bailey, Lincoln Kennedy, all of those absolute studs that dominated and finished with 12-0. But this year's team has already done something that 91 team was not able to do, not because they couldn't, but this dog team finished 13-0. They beat the top five Oregon Ducks twice in the same year. This team is on a 20-game win streak. And during those 20 games, they've beaten 9 ranked teams. And now they are on their way to the college football playoffs. The only team in the Pac-12 to reach the college football playoffs twice in the CFP era. And they are on their way to New Orleans in the Sugar Bowl on January 1st to face the Texas Longhorns, a rematch from last year. So, Mike, we can talk about that in just a minute, but we have got to talk about the Huskies' 34-31 win over the Oregon Ducks on Friday night. And so I just need to know, did you see that game unfolding the way that it did? And what were your takeaways from Friday night's game as the Dogs took care of business, overcoming 9.5-point underdog status to become the first 13-0 Pac-12 champion in the history of the conference?
Well, first of all, back on September 8th, I found round trip tickets to Las Vegas for December 1st for $47.
You and dog.
And I am telling you, I was celebrating. Unfortunately, I celebrated like a Washington linebacker on a pick six named Alfonso Tupu Tala, because I was celebrating and I forgot to hit the place order button. And I never, my wife was looking, she's like, I don't have anything from the airlines. I was like, yeah, it was on September 8th. And she said, no, the charge never came through. And apparently I forgot to order the tickets. So I watched little, from afar.
That's a bummer. But you had to have been happy with the way that the Huskies came out of the gate on Friday night.
It was really hard to curb my enthusiasm and not get too excited, because when they were up 20-3, I think it was, I was like, man, this is, and I was like, nope, you know what? I'm not going to get into the end zone without the ball this time. So, I just kind of played it cool, tried to, you know, not get the horse in front of, or the cart in front of the horse, and just enjoy the game for what it was, rather than going and booking some flights to Pasadena. So, did I see it unfolding that way? I knew it was going to be a tight game. I also thought that having Jalen McMillan back, having the offensive line back to where they were not, they didn't have their first team offensive line intact in that first game either. They didn't have Jalen McMillan. Washington was able to do with these guys, Oregon, everyone was, you know, saying Oregon passes the eye test. Well, they didn't pass the smell test though.
No.
It was Washington that they were the ones that we thought were going to smell the roses, but they're going to taste the sugar, I guess.
That's right.
But it was a game that I really felt like Washington's offense was going to be better than that great Oregon defense, just like everybody, you know, thought that Washington's defense would get boat raced, and they did great against Oregon as well. So it was what I hoped it would be. Did I see Dylan Johnson doing that? I kind of did. I thought that Dylan Johnson would be the better running back that day. I didn't think that it would be Washington that ran the damn ball in Oregon that couldn't, though.
Right.
That I really didn't see.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny because there's kind of a saying that, hey, two things can be true at the same time. And last week's episode, we were talking about this very thing, Mike. We were talking about what's going to happen in this game. Number one, will the Huskies and Ducks be what they have been for the last 7 weeks since they played each other in that epic showdown on October 14th? And then the other question was, are the Dogs due for a game where they put it all together, and are the Ducks due for a clunker? And I think we saw both of those things. In the first half, the Dogs put it together. They were boat racing the Ducks. They were playing their best ball. They get up 20-3. They force 2-3 and outs to start the game for the Ducks' dynamic offense. And then in the second half, things got tight. And the question was, would the Dogs be able to pull out another close game like they have all year long, particularly the last 7 weeks? And they did it once again, and they found a new way to do it. That's been one of the fun things about this, is that the Huskies have done it in different ways. This time, they did it with Dylan Johnson running the ball three times, starting on 1st and 20, when every single person in the stadium and the millions of people watching online all knew the ball was going to Dylan Johnson. And he still ran for like 35 yards in those three downs, sealing the victory for the Huskies and leaving poor Mr. Nix on the sideline with his towel over his head, crying his way to the end of his Pac-12 career.
Well, and here's, you talk about winning different ways. Against Washington State, Washington State had a 15-minute advantage in the time of possession.
Yeah.
And the Huskies won by three. Against Oregon, Washington had a 15-minute time of possession advantage, and they won by three. That is a 30-minute difference in the defense being out there. Okay. Yeah. The way that this staff is able to modify game plans to where they can score with USC, they can punch their way out against Oregon, they can go out and, you know, kick last second field goal in the Apple Cup. It's just the way that they do these. They've lost the turnover battle twice and won. Mm-hmm. They have been outgained a couple of times and won. They've lost the time of possession battle and they have won. All of these things that they say are, you know, you can't lose this and win and expect to win.
Yeah.
And yet these guys seem to find out, because, and I hate to, you know, do corny old dad joke that Edifon talked about, but winners win, because that's what winners do.
That's right.
And that's what they do. They're 13-0. They've won 20 straight. And it's like they lost two games last year by 7 points. And it's like at that point, was sort of when things completely changed, where they just were like, you know what, we got to get back. And they, you know, it's just been amazing to watch how whatever is thrown at them, if they need to fight in a phone booth, if it's going to be a street fight, if it's going to be a shootout, it doesn't matter to Washington.
Absolutely. And I mean, after the Huskies lost against Arizona State last season, they have now beaten the number three team in the country in Texas. They've beaten Oregon three times. They beat number 14, Arizona, and they've beaten Oregon State, who's currently number 19, twice over that last span. And here we are again, like I said, on the precipice of the college football playoffs. And Mike, you know, there is a very small number of programs that have had multiple playoff appearances since the birth of the college football playoffs. Obviously, one. We know these names: Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, Clemson, Oklahoma, Michigan, Notre Dame, and Washington. And, you know, we all know here in the Pacific Northwest that Washington is a quality, high-level college football program. But is it time for the Washington Huskies to be categorized as an upper-level blue blood program again in college football?
I think that's for the fans. I think for the team, I think they don't care. It doesn't, being classified as the blue blood or not, it's not something I've ever really, I'd like it on a national level to be respected, but I don't think that it matters to the team. They're going to go out and be who they are. You mentioned Washington has beaten Oregon three times. They have beaten Oregon two times this season. Maybe that being blue blood would help them get a Pac-12 player of the year, offensive player of the year, instead of a guy that cries into a towel over his head while the other teams ramming the ball down their throat, going 82 yards on one drive, 75 on another, and then sitting on the ball, keeping it away there at the end. Three straight drives
where Washington does exactly what they have to do to win the game. That's what I think this team is more about. Oregon says that they're all about team awards. They don't have any. Washington does. Let them have the individual awards, I guess. Playing in the Final Four rather than Liberty at 10 a.m., I guess, is better. I don't know how you feel about that.
Well, I think Oregon playing number 23 Liberty is just the ultimate, injury to insult or insult to injury. The Ducks came out wounded, and then finding out that they're going to play the number 23 ranked Liberty Flames is just hilarious, I think, for most Husky fans. But Mike, before we move on, because like I said, I think there's definitely an argument to be made for this Husky program to be seen nationally as a blue blood program. One other historical footnote: 1916, Gil Doby led the University of Washington to win the PCC, the Pacific Coast Conference, with a 6-0-1 record. 100-something years later, Kalen DeBoer leads the University of Washington to a 13-0 record to win the Pac-12, bookending this conference as we know it with Washington wins on either side. The Huskies on their Twitter page, I believe it says infinite Pac-12 champions. This is something that maybe the players don't care about this too much, but us fans absolutely do. And that is, for the rest of our lives, we are going to be able to say that we are the final Pac-12 champions. And so,
reigning Pac-12 champions in perpetuity.
In perpetuity. Now, Mike, January 1st is our next game, but as Kalen DeBoer has said multiple times, the job is not done. And certainly DeBoer and his staff are in full work mode right now. Give us a little bit of a taste, an update of what's going on right now as the Husky coaching staff and Courtney Morgan and crew attack both recruiting on the high school level and what they're trying to do in the transfer portal. Just give us kind of a 30,000 foot view of what they're looking to try to accomplish over these next couple weeks.
Well, I think that right now they've done a lot of the this is what is so good about having what was a director of player personnel, Courtney Morgan. That was his previous title. He was able to concentrate on the roster, and I think that he's done his due diligence about the guys that they knew were going into the portal, the guys that were grad transfers that could that basically put their name into the portal at the end of the season. The undergraduate portal, I'm sure that players reached out to them and were saying, hey, I plan on putting, because you're hearing about it all, some through the end of the season. So I think that they have done a good job of managing that while the team is able to focus on winning. And I think Courtney Morgan has probably sorted through a lot of the names that they were really able to target, or they're going to target, prioritize guys, and where they have to really kind of figure things out, where they know some of the guys that are going to be leaving, like Dom Hampton, he's gone. Trice has said he's gone. Zion is out of eligibility. Mm-hmm. So a lot of those guys, they know what's going on. The ones that like Jalen McMillan, does he stay or does he go? Roger Rosengarten. It's going to be dependent upon how their NFL draft card comes back. Are they, can they increase their draft stock with another year of under DeBoer? Can they do that?
can they, you know, can what can they do, or how can they project? So that's going to really determine how they prioritize guys that that they're going to be going after. Now, I feel really good about Washington landing, and I'm trying to think of his name right now, the Will Rogers, out of Mississippi State. I feel good about that. Tobias Merriweather, feel good about that. So I think that they're doing their evaluation of guys that they can bring in, but they're going to have to pick of the litter, especially when it comes to receivers. Dom, not Dom, that's his dad, but Tobias Merriweather, he's a great kid, but I think that they're going to be looking for somebody that has played a lot of snaps, that has been around the game, that will benefit from a scheme that really focuses on passing. And I think that, that is where they're going to be doing a lot of things. We could see Dylan Johnson come back. I felt like, you know, this was going to be a big year. You know, he's shown against USC, obviously, you know, too. There haven't been many guys that have run for 250 yards. Forget that it's the USC defense. That's a rare feat. So you can see that 156 yards against that amazing Oregon defensive front. I said in quotes. you know, so Dylan Johnson, does he come back? And, you know, that's going to be dependent on how the Huskies move on things. So,
and, you know, I mean, you're talking about like getting those guys back. And last year, there was definitely a sense from those upper tier guys that they did a lot, but they did not achieve what they set out to do. And Michael Penix really got the party started when he made the announcement at the team awards banquet that he was coming back. And boy, that really just lit the fire. And we saw Rome come back, Jalen come back, Trice come back, Thule come back, Zion, you know, the list just went on and on and on. I'm curious, like, what's going to be that narrative, that storyline that Grubb and DeBoer and Inge and Morrell are going to try to pull on to get these guys to come back? Because, you know, they're 13-0. They're the Pac-12 champions. They're on their way to the college football playoffs. So aside from, you know, not winning the national championship this year, you know, there's really not a whole lot to bring them back other than, like you said, the opportunity to improve their personal draft stock or to improve their game. But before we go too far down that road, I wanted to get your thoughts because, you know, this is also the time of year when the awards start to come out. Of course, we know Michael Penix is a finalist and will be headed to New York City to find out whether or not he's won the Heisman. Rome is a finalist for the Biletnikoff. But the All-Pac-12 awards came out today. No surprise, Coach DeBoer wins Coach of the Year for the second year in a row. But then from there on out, it gets a little bit surprising and dicey. Bo Nix, Offensive Player of the Year. Leiatu Latu, the former Husky, Defensive Player of the Year. And then, boy, oh boy, Bo Nix, first string quarterback, Michael Penix, second string. Mike, what is your reaction to what you saw come out of the first and second team, all Pac-12 awards this year?
Forget the color of the jersey for right now. I want you to think fourth and sixth, game on the line. Do you want Michael Penix or do you want Bo Nix?
Give me Michael Penix. Give me Michael Penix on October the 14th and on December the 1st. I think that guy is the guy that I want every single day of the week and twice on Saturdays.
So my thought is, you know, to see how they would vote the guy that got beaten twice by the second teamer, that, you know, that tells me that these coaches deserve to go to the ACC. Yeah. They deserve to go to the Big 12. They deserve to be the Pac-2.
Yeah.
If they can't figure out the guy that is knows how to win, the guy that is standing in the middle of 100 teammates at the start of the fourth quarter, imploring his guys to go out there and give it all, leave nothing to chance, and where the other quarterback is over there with a towel on his head, he's not out there on the sideline cheering his guys on. It's just stupid,
yeah,
that they would do that.
Like, you know, you said, Michael Penix threw for over 300 yards in both the Oregon games and threw the go-ahead touchdown that sealed the game in both games. What else can this young man do?
What can't he do? The only thing that he didn't do was sell programs out in front of Husky Stadium. Yeah. He did everything.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think everybody in Husky Nation knows that this was the snub of all snubs. But was there anything else? Was there anything about this Pac-12 all, you know, first and second team honorables that stood out to you?
Well, you know, the team that is playing Liberty at 10 a.m. on Saturday, that's your Pac-12 player of the year, offensive player of the year. You know, the one thing that Edifon Ulofoshio posted a little while ago was congratulating his former teammate Leatu Latu about winning the defensive player of the year. And, you know, that really is a great story. Those are former teammates, and it shows that when you take off the color of the jersey and you look at the person, that is greater to these Washington players than anything else.
Yeah.
And just a ton of respect handed out to Edifon for that. But, you know, Braylon Trice, you know, he did a lot of good stuff. I don't have the whole thing memorized.
Sure.
But, you know, and probably because I spent so much time, you know, trying to monitor my blood pressure while I wrote my story about how they got it wrong.
Well, how about this, Mike? Troy Faletonu, first team. Roger Rosengarten, honorable mention.
This is a tackle heavy class. But when you put Roger against the Oregon edge rusher that was leading the conference in sacks, then you put the Utah guy in there, and he shuts them down. He does the same thing. He gave up, I think, one QB pressure in 45 snaps in the Pac-12 championship game. The guy has been money all season long.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I know there are a lot of great tackles out there. He didn't get bent over backwards like what Braylon Trice did to Josh Connerly in that game. You know, so Roger has been the blindside protector, and to give up so few sacks and to be able to produce the number one running back in the conference. I guess maybe I don't know how to really rate those things. I guess I look on how they actually perform.
Yeah. And I would say, to me, the other, you know, great snub or miss is not even having Jalen Polk as an honorable mention as a wide receiver.
I mean, did he catch for 1,000 yards? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, again, Jalen Polk had some of the biggest catches in the entire season for the Huskies and for the Pac-12. To not be an all Pac-12 selection, it just feels like, Mike, and I, you know, maybe I'm biased. In fact, I know I am, but it just feels like as the Huskies are going out on top, that there were a lot of, you know, jealous and, you know, just really petty voters that said, you know what, we don't want Washington to get all the accolades, so we're gonna throw a few of these guys under the bus. And that is just, it's wrong. It's unfair to those kids who worked so hard, who came back, who made the sacrifices. And, you know, to me, it just reminds me of when the Pac-10 screwed over Coach Don James after the Billy Joe Hobert scandal. And, you know, I just think that the one thing that this conference has always feared is a dominant University of Washington. And that's what's happening. And they're doing everything they can, even on the way out, to keep that from being the story.
The LA powers, you are right on that one. The other ones, you know, have fun in the ACC, have fun in the Big 12, have fun with the Pac-2, whatever you want. You know, let's go for team awards of a national championship. That's the only thing I can say.
That's right. Well, hey, Mike, I promised you we'd keep this one short. So any final thoughts, and give us an update on what's happening at realdog.com and how our listeners can follow and can get all of the latest information, all of the latest Husky news, the insider nuggets that you are always, I mean, you are like the hound dog of Huskies. You're sniffing down everything and you call it before anybody else even has a whiff of what's going on. So give us your final thoughts and anything you want to share about Real Dog before we go.
Well, in the last year, we have broken far more stories than anybody else. And sometimes I've sat on several stories. You know, we're having a lot of fun. We have some new writers that have come on board to help with the coverage. We're going to be doing a whole lot more in recruiting and transfer portal over the next 2.5 months. It's really going to hit high gear right after whenever the season ends. Right now, what's going on is a lot of jockeying for a position on a lot of things, positioning themselves for certain guys. I'm expecting at least three players now to be leaving Washington. I'm going to be doing a story on that here shortly. So we're going to have some exclusives on that. I'm in Texas for Christmas right now. We do an early Christmas with our son down here. So I haven't been able to do as much as I want in those things, but have several stories coming up about the transfer portal. But, you know, realdog.com, as always, and it's spelled D-A-W-G. You can follow me at Howlin' Husky on Twitter.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Guys, if you love the Dog and Duck Show, you've got to get in on realdog.com. Nobody does it better than Mike. He lives, breathes, bleeds purple and Husky football. And this is his passion. And he does an excellent job. So definitely go to realdog.com, get yourself a membership, and make the most of being on top of the world, because the Huskies have the longest winning streak in college football. can you get out there and yell it from the rooftops? Because this is big time news. So guys, thank you for being a part of the Dog and Duck Show. Mark and I will be back as soon as he recovers. Don't worry, we will have plenty of time to unpack what it means to be a dog and a duck moving forward into the future. But for Mike Martin and all my dog fans out there, go Dogs.
Go Dogs.